Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to Return to the Tao of Healing. I told you, I promised you that I would get Stephen Acuff on the show to talk to us about macrobiotic nutritional eating and healing, and guess what? He's with us today. So most of you, as you know, have heard of macrobiotic foods and eating, but are you trying it? Have you ever tried it? Do you know what it really means to be on a macrobiotic diet? Do you remember we talked about the yin and yang? We got an expert with us today that's going to really give us some ideas of what yin and yang foods are and the energetics of those foods. We're also going to talk about the role of biochemical balancing that's needed for us to be energetically balanced with the proper amount of minerals and vitamins. And we're also going to talk a little bit about how food can help you to heal mind and body. So without any further ado, let me introduce to you and bring forth our guest this day, Stephen Acuff. And welcome to our Blog Talk Radio program and on Zoom today with us, Stephen.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Oh, you're more than welcome. You're more than welcome. I'm glad that you were able to make it. So let's start a little with talking a little bit about what is macrobiotic eating or diet. I don't like using that word diet. I prefer nutritional lifestyle because we're not dying to anything. But, you know, explain to us a little bit about what that means to eat to live macrobiotically.
Yes, I agree with your rejection of the word diet because it just conjures up an idea of something that isn't so much fun, maybe, or limited. And the macrobiotic way of eating is really very open. It's up to you to decide what it should be. So it means that you develop your own intuition. And if we look at the guidelines, it's pretty much common sense. Like you eat organic foods, you eat foods that are full of nutrients that are going to supply the body with what it needs to function properly. And then you make those adjustments according to your own private needs. Part of it is based on our biological needs. Like we look at our teeth, we'll see that we have molars, and we look at which animals have molars like us, and it's plant-eating animals. Animals that live on meat have other kind of teeth, that they have teeth to rip. So already there we would say it's going to be a plant-based food program. However, this doesn't mean it has to be vegan, but it's definitely based that way. And then you just experiment and find out what's right for you. Whole grains, vegetables, two mainstays, and then, of course, the question of protein, because if you eat legumes or pulses, like lentils and chickpeas and beans, then you get plenty of protein and there's no problem. However, some people who go into more of the plant-based foods miss this, and so they'll eat vegetables, maybe whole grains like brown rice and oats and others, quinoa, but they may not get enough beans to really be satisfied.
So I was going to ask you about that because some people don't seem to get enough protein. They just don't feel satisfied. How can you really get satisfied with just eating beans, you know, for someone that's a meat eater that may be wanting to transition to something else?
Yeah, so it's the combination of eating the legumes, the beans, lentils, chickpeas, as well as whole grains, because they complement each other very well. And we look at third world countries, we see that this is really the way people eat. You know, they can't afford much animal protein, and they have that combination which gives the full amino acid pattern that you need, and you have the protein that's available. This feeling of being satisfied, satiation, comes with that.
Okay.
So you should be really, you know, when you got it right, you should be able to go about 4 hours at least, maybe also longer, but at least 4 hours without feeling you need to eat something.
Okay. So if a person is going to consider a macrobiotic diet, maybe they might not go completely macrobiotic. What would be your suggestions for them to get started? I think in one of my emails to you, I mentioned that a lot of people don't live near open markets, fresh food markets, or fruits and vegetables are not plentiful in their area. You know, they may live in a grocery desert, you know, especially in some of our large cities. They even though we would think that they would have the opportunity to have more foods available and fresh foods available, but they may have to go miles to get to a grocery store. What would you suggest for them to incorporate if they are more inclined to buy in bulk versus going to the market every day? Because when I was in Europe, that was one of the practices that I saw, is that people would go and get their fresh fish or their fresh vegetables basically on a daily basis because their refrigerations were small and they didn't have large freezers, but they ate better because it was fresh. So what would you suggest to someone that doesn't have that capability?
Well, in today's supermarkets, you can really do pretty well. They even have a good selection of organic foods. Because with the problem of glyphosate, we really do need to prioritize organic foods. The glyphosate just wreaks havoc on the body. And the U.S. is also quite contaminated with it. Here in Europe, we have, I think I read, 10 times less use of glyphosate compared to the U.S. And the U.S. is less compared to China. So you want to look for organic foods. And many of the larger food outlets now that people have access to that also sell bulk items, you can get organic. Now, if you can't get organic, you know, it's okay, because this is another issue of, you know, either war or black and white. It's like there can be any kind of nuance between that, and, you know, do as well as you can. And often it's just taking it a step at a time, you know, just doing things like saying, I'm going to store my food now, like after I've cooked it, I'm going to store the food in glass containers instead of plastic containers. That's already a good step forward right there.
Wow.
So you look for beans and the lentils, and those are always available. You know, and as I say, even if you can't get them organically, in organic quality, then it's okay to get whatever is available. You have to eat something. And there are some ways to break down glyphosate. So if you are in a situation where you don't have a lot of organic availability, one of the good ways to do it is either to take apple cider vinegar, like using on a salad or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or having pickled vegetables, like organically grown, if possible, but anyway, a natural pickling process using the fermentation rather than just making them sour with vinegar. You know, vinegar is okay, but the fermentation will make it even better because that acid that is created out of the fermentation is, or as I say, you can't get it from the vinegar too, but better from the fermentation. This breaks down glyphosate, which is one of the big problems. And, you know, you mentioned in the introduction about the connection between body and mind, and glyphosate will affect the brain in the long term, so it's good to know about these things.
Yeah.
So you get the things that are available, do it as well as you can, and then as you get better and better at it, you know, you become more experienced, then you find ways of accessing the food you can get by online. You can order some of the specialty items, like, you know, macrobiotically speaking, we like to eat a miso soup, you know, it's a vegetable
yeah.
soup that's seasoned with miso. And if your local market doesn't have it, you can go on and find it offered by these online companies. and just have it sent to your home.
Oh, okay. Wow. Well, you know, this is good information. Let me ask you if you're interested in trying this, what would be the best way to get started? What would you suggest for a person to do to transition to a macrobiotic diet? Would they need to go see someone to find out if they were more of a yin constitution or a yang constitution or whatever conditions is going on in their body that would impact this macrobiotic diet?
Well, the energetics are a very interesting part of the macrobiotic program. The energetics that we know as yin and yang, which are basically just saying, is the body, does it have more of a relaxed, looser tendency, or is it more contracted and firm, or is it in balance? And some conditions do need to pay attention to that, but for beginners especially, you just go towards the middle and then you're generally doing fine. Like, you don't have to really worry so much about that. What you do is avoid the extremes. Like, one thing you can do is go into my website, and there for free you've got access to all of the basic information, the food lists of what to have. I have a whole week's menus you can look at to get inspiration from. And so there you've got some basic information. And then I've got, you know, articles you can read and interviews. So you'll be very well informed. And then just, you know, cruising the internet, you can find other sources. So you don't really need to speak to someone. Now, one of the most common reasons why people want to start is because macrobiotic food has been very successful in helping people restore their health when they have health problems. And in the U.S., about 80% of adults are dealing with some chronic health disorder. So this becomes interesting, and it's very rare that someone contacts me just out of interest and says, you know, I'd like to know more about this. They usually say, well, what can I do about my asthma? What can I do about diabetes? And they're just generally getting into the right foods, like don't eat sugar. You know, I mean, everybody knows that sugar is damaging, but people still eat it, of course.
Okay.
So, you know, you just become more disciplined to say, okay, I'm cutting sugar out. That'd be like a very basic thing to do. And already there, you're going to decrease a lot of the problems because insulin resistance, in other words, your cells of your body becoming resistant to the effect of insulin, is one of the major causes of illness.
Well, let me ask you this, Stephen. You're mentioning to stop eating sugar. I'm sure some of our audience out there, someone is saying, well, what do I do instead of sugar? You know, if I'm I really like to have sweet stuff in my, you know, like in my tea or in my food or whatever, or I like cookies or cake or whatever it may be, what can I replace that's going to give me that satisfaction that my body is craving? I'm thinking it's the sugar, but it's something else.
Yes, good point here. What do you do instead? The best thing is to look for a natural sweetener. So, you know, people generally tend towards honey, but honey is an extreme sweetener, so it doesn't really help you as much with the insulin resistance issue. But you can get grain-based sweeteners like rice syrup, barley malt, maple syrup, coconut sugar, coconut syrup. So these are all much better than getting sugar. And so you start with that. You know, you can get granular or the more liquid styles. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I worked at a clinic in Germany for several years as a food consultant, and I found that most people coming in as new patients needed exactly 3 days to lose that tendency to want sugar. And then they felt that the other more gentle kind of sweeteners were all the sweet they needed after 3 days. So it's just to hang in there and, you know, like get by. And if you do have a bit of honey, you know, because that's a much more intense sweetener, then it can still be part of a transition, you know, whatever it takes to get off this. So we do have these two things at the same time. We want to get rid of the thing that's holding us up and causing us illness, and we want to take something that's going to positive create better health. So out with the sugar, in with the barley malt. Out with the sugar, in with the coconut syrup.
Okay. All right. I think we get it. Out with the sugar, everybody, including myself. from time to time. I don't do sugar, you know, but there are times when you do get that, I want something sweet. But I find that just putting yams in my food satisfies that, you know, for me. So I don't know if yams is part of the macrobiotic diet. Would it be sweet potatoes and yams?
Oh, yes. I mean, vegetables are great, like, you know, the pumpkin, squash, yams. Those are very good ways to get sweet. I mean, the need for sweet is actually part of healthy food. There are, according to the traditional Chinese method of healthy eating, you look for the five flavors to combine in a meal. You know, there's salty, there's bitter, sharp, sour, and also sweet. So if you've got some kind of sweet thing like sweet potatoes, baked squash, there you've got this all the sweet you need.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a great way to create a balanced meal is to have something sweet along with it.
You know, I prepared a soup yesterday, and I tell you, I put some yams in it and some squash in it. It was lentil soup. And, oh, my, you talking about a complete meal? You know, and I also threw in there, everybody, just so that you know, I threw in some sunflower seeds and some pumpkin seeds. And, wow, did it really give me that satisfaction of having something crunchy as well as having the sweet?
Well, that's the point you bring up about the crunchiness. One of the complaints I've heard of people is that when they start eating like baked squash and soft-cooked rice, things that they long for something to bite into, and that's a great way to do it. Add pumpkin seeds, some chopped almonds,
yeah.
You know, walnuts, whatever you want to have, this sunflower seeds. Those are all great ways. Then if there is something satisfying about chewing on something, you have some resistance.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I had all of that in my soup yesterday. So it was wonderful. Answer this for me. Now you've done this for over 40 years, and you've worked with people. You've, as you just said, you mentioned people with diabetes or pre-diabetes. They have other ailments that have come to you. How successful is it in just changing the diet, period, with somebody that may have some kind of chronic disease going on? What can they look forward to if they just stop and take a moment and make these corrections with their nutrition? What can they look forward to?
So what the body is a self-healing machine. It just basically is always healing itself. And so we just have to get out of the way and let nature take its course. And the same way as if you fall and you cut yourself, that wound on your skin will heal without any intervention other than just clean it, you know, and keep it from getting infected. But it's actually nature that will heal that wound. And with diabetes, it's very similar. I've seen people who are type 2 diabetics be totally off insulin in 2 weeks, you know, and that's all just because they've actually done this to themselves by creating an insulin resistance. And when they eat properly and no longer have these spikes of insulin, it disappears. So it's very easy to do. So they think about, okay, when I eat carbohydrate, I want to have protein and oil along too, because those are the components of food that will slow down the spike in insulin after eating carbohydrate. Carbohydrate would be things like sweet vegetables, whole grains, any kind of sweetener, fruit. So if I had, say, a good meal would be like brown rice and then some kind of sweet vegetable and maybe some green vegetables like broccoli, and then the beans, and I've got maybe some kind of tahini sesame sauce on there, or I've got olive oil and coconut oil. Well, there I've got it, and when I eat that food, now it starts creating the balance.
Okay.
And then within a short time, there it is. You no longer have diabetes. And this is very important because if you look at the projections for the U.S., and the U.S. is just typical for other industrialized countries, projection is that in 30 years, somewhere between the third and half of the whole population will be diabetic. And this doesn't have to be.
Right.
Type 1 diabetics it's a different story. That where the pancreas has been attacked, but we won't go into that now, because most people have got just this very simple insulin-resistant type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm. So changing the diet, eating more balanced, and they can get this information on your website, different recipes and whatnot for various types of food changes that you want to change in your diet. What's your website address?
The website is just my name, Stephen Acuff, and there is a famous Acuff, Roy Acuff, who's called the granddad of country music. He began the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville, Tennessee. So that's the way you spell it, and then .org, O-R-G. So StephenAcuff.org, you come in, and you can even take it in other languages if you don't want to have it in English. So I've got it.
Oh, really?
I've got what, German and Swedish both, because I teach in all three languages. So I'm here in Stockholm, but before the COVID thing, I used to go to Germany a lot. So, you know, people do check it out in all languages. And I've just got my book done in German now, which is quite a task, too. But
yeah,
it's a lot of fun to help people all over the world. You know, why was I brought to this world? For what purpose was I brought here, you know? And obviously, it was to help people with this, you know. You can decide to make a lot of money, or you can decide you want to help people.
And sometimes the two don't meet, but it's okay. I understand. Believe me, I do understand. Let's talk a moment, Stephen, if you don't mind, about the biochemical balance that we should be looking for in our minerals and vitamins that impact our gut health. Because I've told patients over the years that a lot of our dis-ease starts right there in our gut. And finally, you start hearing even Western medical doctors begin to talk more and more about gut health.
Yes. That's a very important issue. When I began with macrobiotics, I was more interested in the energetics, because we got this teaching from Japan, which came originally from the just general Far Eastern approach to natural self-healing.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was very interesting. Like, does the food have a cooling or warming effect, and looking at it that way? And then as I got into it more, I discovered that these biochemical things are much more specific and important, because so many people are lacking the minerals they need and the vitamins because of the highly processed foods that are typical today. So you just want to give the body what it needs. And by eating the right way, you just restore those minerals and other nutrients so that the body functions properly. Just give you an example. Almost everyone has got a vitamin D deficiency at this time of the year in the Northern Hemisphere. Like at the time you and I are speaking here, which is the late winter, spring is on the horizon there somewhere. So after a long winter, almost everyone has a vitamin D deficiency. And there are 140 peer-reviewed studies proving that vitamin D levels will determine how sick you get from COVID. Now imagine how interesting that would be if people knew that. And yet we don't hear anything about self-healing, because the authorities just fixated on treatment. But what we can do ourselves is be sure we get the vitamin D. So we take vitamin D supplements. We can take cod liver oil, which is not as bad as it sounds. You know, people hear it.
Really? My childhood memory is
they've even got it in capsules today, but you can actually just take it as a supplement. I would say, if not all, vitamin D supplements are made from sheep wool. There's it's in that secretion that comes out of the sheep. So you can just take it in supplements, either capsules or drops. And it'll make a big difference, and you need to take more than just a very small amount, of course. So right there, we've got something that can make a big difference, and imagine how much less people would be afraid of a virus if they knew that something as simple as vitamin D would help them. Magnesium is another one. Almost everybody's got a magnesium deficiency, I have discovered. And, if they would eat seaweed, which is something that we recommend in macrobiotics, probiotics very high in magnesium, because seawater's got a lot of magnesium, then you don't have a deficiency in that. And that will also affect how your immune system functions as well as other functions in the body.
So what does a magnesium deficiency look like for our listeners and viewers? What would that look like?
Well, the most common symptom of a magnesium deficiency is well known as getting cramping in your legs. Like people, you know, suddenly they get these unexplained cramps. Now, it could be a potassium deficiency as well, but it's very common that that is what happens. And the antagonist is calcium. So the more people look at calcium as something they want to take as a supplement, the more magnesium is suppressed. So we get people getting fixated on dairy food and milk for they're getting enough calcium. They actually suppress magnesium, and then, you know, they'll become more vulnerable to infections, because magnesium is part of the body's self-defense system. And also, you know, if people tend to have heart problems, this can be a magnesium deficiency, because when magnesium is too little in the body, there's a tendency for things to tighten up and constrict. So blood vessels constricting, that would be a sign, like getting angina. And so it's interesting that
angina is what, though?
Angina, like the pains you get in your chest, that where they'll say, you know, let's give you a heart bypass operation, you know, and so it's like it's just signaling that you're getting some very unpleasant blockages somewhere in the body, because it's getting constricted. The blood flow is not the way it should be. So all those are things that show, you know, that it's time to look at the magnesium. And isn't it interesting that part of blood pressure medication is called calcium channel blockers. So the way it works is the medication will block the calcium so that you don't get these constricted blood vessels, and it would be better just to get enough magnesium. Don't take dairy products so you get no overload of calcium, and then you won't need calcium channel blockers, at least not nearly as much. And, you know, you just become much better at taking care of yourself.
Wow, that's interesting, because I can remember years ago they encouraged us to take calcium. You know, as we aged, they wanted you to take more calcium, and now you're saying too much calcium is actually blocking the magnesium, which could in effect affect our hearts, give us leg cramping, which probably is also related to the heart, maybe with circulation problems and all of that. So that's good to know. That's really, really good to know. And as we age, I'm sure that a lot of my listeners and viewers are over the age of 40-ish, 50-ish. And so what should we be looking for to make sure that we have enough of in our as far as minerals and vitamins are concerned, and what foods can we incorporate that would help us to do that?
Yeah, the most important thing is to have natural foods, of course, that are not processed, because the processing is what takes the nutrients out of the food. So you try to get things as unprocessed as possible. But especially good are, first of all, green leafy vegetables. If I'm going to pick one right off, would be kale. Kale, if we look at the amount of calories you eat and what you get out of that in the way of nutrients, that's just a tightly packed bag of or packet of nutrients. Also seaweed, I mentioned before. You can buy seaweed. People buy it dried in packages. You can get it online if they don't have it in your local shops. Almost everybody will have an iodine deficiency if they don't eat seaweed. All surveys got it. That's why they iodize salt.
Okay.
There's a couple of examples. And then for something along the lines of sweet, berries. Berries are very high in concentration, where most fruit is sugar, basically sugar. It's not refined sugar, but still it's sugar. When you get the berries, it's not as sweet as, say, bananas or pears. But there you've got a very high concentration of the secondary plant substances like the polyphenols, bioflavonoids. And so blueberries and all kinds of berries are great to have. And then as far as animal food goes, interestingly, eggs. Eggs have got are very concentrated with nutrients. And we've been so programmed to be afraid of cholesterol that people, you know, have avoided them. And, you know, we know today that this whole cholesterol thing was wrong. In fact, in my book, I even wrote a chapter about called cholesterol craziness, because there's just nothing to that. And so, you know, people can relax and say, okay, I have some eggs, because we need protein, and, you know, we don't have to eat just plant protein. And eggs are a good way to complement the plant protein. So there you've got it again, you know. The fat soluble vitamins A, B along with that some D, and it's just a question of informing ourselves. So in the end, we'd say we really need to inform ourselves so that we can find those foods that are proper, and you know, that the things I eat every day give me that. And of course, the proof is in the pudding, as they say. I haven't seen a doctor in 51 years, you know.
Praise God.
So, yeah.
That's great. By God's grace, that is wonderful, Stephen. Well, for some of us, that's not quite the fact. Some of us have aged gracefully and graciously, but as we age, something might come up. You find that things sneak up on you. You don't know that you have this, and as you're saying, it probably is a mineral or a vitamin deficiency over time that has created this symptom, and we could look at correcting it first through diet before extreme measures. Is that what I'm getting from this conversation, that we should always look to change our eating habits, because that is the first place healing takes place?
That's right. The thing we've all been talking about for 2 years now has been COVID and the pandemic of COVID. And actually, the real pandemic behind the pandemic is a pandemic of malnutrition, where people have too little nutrients. They've been eating foods that do not supply the body with what it needs. And there you are. You become vulnerable, and you're more likely to get sick. I may have been exposed several times to the COVID virus, because a virus itself cannot just take you. You know, you have to be vulnerable to it. Mm-hmm. The immune system is made to deal with all kinds of things, including virus. So, you know, what we have is a pandemic of undernourished people in the world, and this is why everyone needs to look at this more closely. And sometimes I feel like I've been practicing my whole life for this, because since this pandemic began, I've been, you know, had many, many people contacting me, asking me questions, because then health is no longer something abstract that I'd like to be healthier. It's like, wow, you know, I really want to do something now, because I don't want to be down on my back, you know, gasping for air. When we know that, you know, some people will get sick and others don't. Some people get very sick and others feel like they just have a cold. Mm-hmm. And there we got it. Just get those nutrients out there so that the immune system will work properly.
So you're saying, more than anything else is what I'm gathering, is it's a balance of protein. It's a balance of eating the right vegetables with our proteins and making sure that we get grains. Now, we haven't talked much about the grains. What impact does grains have on the body?
This is a very important issue, because until about 25 years ago, everyone considered whole grains to be very healthy food, and that macrobiotics has grains as one of the pillars of health. And then the low-carb thing came along, and then suddenly, you know, people were saying, no, we're going to avoid grains because, you know, they do this and that. But the real question is, do you eat refined grains or do you eat unrefined grains? So do you eat white rice or do you eat brown rice or natural rice? There's also black and red rice. They're all good. or other kinds of whole products. Do you eat white flour, or do you get, you know, the like if you eat breads, is it made from whole grain bread, or is it made from refined white flour? So when you've got the whole grains, now you're getting it right. And another thing is that when you eat the whole grains as grains, they have much less effect on a quick insulin spike than ground up into flour. So in other words, if you do feel you're more leaning towards blood sugar problems or insulin swings, then you would eat more of the whole grains like brown rice or whole oats or quinoa rather than, you know, having breads and pasta. Then grains are going to be very, very healing. And as I said, the teeth are made for grinding grains.
Now, listen, as you can see, my ethnicity is I probably would enjoy some cornbread. And I've gotten away from cornbread, but what can I eat in place of cornbread?
Well, there's basically nothing wrong with cornbread. I would say we differentiate between two conditions. One is say, you know, I'm interested in being healthy. What should I watch out for? Then I would say, you know, have cornbread all you like because you're in a stable situation. You just want to stay that way. The way it usually works is people come to me and they say, hey, I've got diabetes. What should I do? And I say, okay, well, for about 2 months here, you should really concentrate on not eating flour products and just eat the whole grain that hasn't been ground up. And then as your health improves and your insulin resistance is gone, then you can go back and have that.
Okay. All right. I'll make sure. Do you all hear him? All right. So those of you that like your bread, be it cornbread or muffins or whatever it may be, we need to change that. If you know that you have a problem or you've been told that you're pre-diabetic or diabetic. So we can still have the grains. And which grains are those now, again, that we can have that is healthy for us to have?
Yeah, well, the best of the non-glutinous grains, because gluten has become a big problem. And the one grain I would recommend people to actively avoid is wheat.
Okay.
Because the wheat that people get today is not what it was earlier. In the 70s, they introduced a hybridized wheat, which has a special kind of gluten called alpha-gliadin. And this creates stress in the gut. And the gut, your gut condition will basically decide your health, as we know today. So leave wheat out of the mix. But if you don't have organic food, then it's especially important to avoid wheat because that's where there is a lot of glyphosate. And so, if you only have non-organic things, just can do try to avoid the wheat. But the other things, my favorites are rice, but I also like oats. For breakfast, I eat oats, but rather than rolled oats, I tend to eat whole oats, like sometimes called oat groats. And, I soak those. Now, when you soak grains, you're able to break down the phytic acid. That's PHY, phytic acid, which is there to prevent certain things from happening. And it's also to keep animals from being able to eat up the plants. So when we soak it, we're able to break that down and get much more nourishment from the food. So if I have oats, for example, whole oats, and I just cook them up, I'll get a certain amount of phytic acid, and if I soak them properly, then that phytic acid is broken down.
How long do you soak it?
24 hours is ideal.
Okay.
But now with oats, I mentioned oats because of one special reason. The soaking of oats itself doesn't work as well as other grains because it doesn't have the phytase enzyme that will break that down in soaking. So you add a tablespoon of vinegar to the soaking water, and that vinegar will then break down the phytic acid because phytic acid binds to the minerals and will prevent them from being absorbed, like, say, a magnesium. We need magnesium, but magnesium will bind with the phytic acid, become a phytate, that's a magnesium phytate, and then your body can't absorb that, so you lose out.
So that I think is a problem too for a lot of people. We may eat pretty decently, but our foods aren't being absorbed. So you're saying there's several things that we can do. One would be to soak the food, soak our beans. I was taught even to soak the beans for 8 hours or more if you wanted to be able to cook. We would say cook them faster, but it's actually helping something, another process. What would that process be that the body needs that we're not looking at when we don't take the time to soak our food and we're not getting the nourishment that we need to get?
Yes, the soaking is indeed really important. Some people will come home to me and they'll come in, they'll say, I've got the beans soaking, I've got the grain soaking, I have the nuts soaking. A lot of soaking going on because of the great advantage of doing that. And what it does is just helps remove the what they're called anti-nutrients. Okay. Of course, every life form is trying to survive and doesn't want to be eaten. And but the way life works is everything's eating everything else. So every kind of life develops its own protection. And plants can't run away. They can't. They don't have claws to slice back at you. So they just create all of these. They create all these substances that makes you regret that you tried to eat them. Block your digestion. You know, make it impossible to use them for food. And by soaking, we can get rid of those and make use of the food properly. And in older days, these were things that people really knew a lot about because you couldn't just open your fridge and get food anytime you wanted. You had to go out and find it, and it was a constant search for food. And they developed ways of getting the most nutrition out of that food, and that means soaking and sometimes fermentation. That will also break it down. So, you know, you would just learn how to do that. And there's different soaking times, and that's why basically I wrote the book is because people get confused. You know, they say, now, you know, when I do the nuts, I'm supposed to soak those for 8 hours in salt water. That's right. But when I do the oats, that's without salt. That's right. No salt in that water, but salt in there. And then, okay, and how long are they? Oh, 24 hours would be perfect for the beans and the oats, but 8 hours is like, if you don't have more time, 8 hours will do it. But to get the total breakdown, do it longer. So at the end, all these numbers kind of floating around in their heads, and it seems to be very complex, but it actually isn't. When you've been in this for a couple of weeks, you know, it's just as easy as anything else.
Well, my sister, she soaks everything. It can be fruit. It can be vegetables. She's a vegetarian, but her significant other is a huge chicken. So she soaks the chicken in apple cider vinegar because she realizes that there's a possibility, as you were saying, everything is going to try to survive. Even a parasite is going to try to survive. So that parasite is going to try to survive in that chicken or even on vegetables. And we may not see these little parasites, but she has, she's a naturopath. And so, you know, she spent her life looking at foods as well. And she's amazed me with some of the pictures she's shown me of these little parasites that are in the food. So the soaking not only helps internally, but it also helps externally to remove certain little microscopic little thingies that we can't imagine is there.
That's exactly right. Your sister's smart because that's just what you should do is take care, because those parasites, as you mentioned, are trying to survive like everything else. They've got their own programs going. And, you know, we can do so much for ourselves. We just have the knowledge. So that's what's good about being able to have this exchange with you today, is that anyone listening to this will be better informed and they can make more use of this amazing possibility of just creating your own health. Imagine, you know, like at my age, I'm 76 years old, I should be worried about my health because I'm more vulnerable being at my age. And yet I'm not worried about anything because, you know, I haven't been sick in so many decades. I don't even know what it's like to be sick more than having an occasional cold if I was traveling or something and not able to take care of myself properly. Imagine how good that feels. And this is because I have taken the time to get that information and know what do I do to keep myself healthy. Because, you know, when you began with our interview about macrobiotics, I would say a cornerstone is that it is knowing how to take care of yourself, being your own boss of your own body. And so you decide what you're going to do. You decide if you're going to be injected with anything. You just, all these things should be your decision to make. But you can't make those decisions unless you're informed. You can't make it properly, let's say, without the information. And so that's our job, is to get the information out.
Well, I'm so grateful for you being here, because that is the job. That is our job, is to get the information out. And, you know, people are today, you know, are looking for changes. They want changes. This audience that you're probably having the honor of being, giving us this information to, they probably, some of them, most of them, are already aware. But I'm hoping that there are some things that they can learn too, or be reinforced to do again, because, you know, it's easy to get away from that which we know and just do that which is convenient versus what we know to do. Because if you think about it, just what you were talking about, the soaking of the foods, and the preparing of the foods, and it seems like an ordeal. But if we look at it more as a ritual, you know, of this is going into my temple, and I'm receiving this energy from this food, so I'm going to do the best that I can to prepare it and to enjoy it, knowing that the outcome is that it's going to benefit me. I think if we change the way we think about it, that would be helpful as well. So I'm hoping that we're able to do that for our listeners and viewers today, is to change their perception of how they view food. Even the macrobiotic diet or nutrition is not one where it should be shunned or we should be afraid of. There are things that we can embrace, even if we're transitioning or just going to implement with macrobiotic diet. Wouldn't you agree, Stephen?
That's right. It's just a matter of taking the steps that feel right to you, because this is an ongoing process, and there's no demands made of anyone. Sometimes people will, you know, they'll be, well, like, you know, this is just too much for me to do this. And say, well, do it at the pace that you need to do. Just take your time, because there's no forcing it. Anything has to be by tomorrow. Everything has to be perfect. You know, you just do it as you can, and as long as you keep moving forward, that's the main thing, you know. When you understand, for example, that the body basically is in a natural state, is not inflamed, but when it gets out of balance and inflammation takes off, then you just be sure that you do all the things necessary to keep your body from getting more inflamed, you know, like, say, like nightshades. You know, you don't eat tomatoes, potatoes, because those are inflammatory kinds of foods. And then, you know, the body just takes care of itself. So, you know, you're having brown rice instead of potatoes.
What's a nightshade food? And first of all, everyone, this is a live program, and I'm doing it from home. And unfortunately, my neighbor opened and closed her car door, and my little puppy has decided to let everyone know that she's in the house. So please excuse the sound. She will calm down in a moment. I think she may have calmed down. She heard me talking about it, so now she's over here at my lap. So what are nightshade foods for our listeners and viewers, Stephen?
Nightshades are a special group of plants that have toxins. The best known is tobacco. The tobacco has a toxin we all know called nicotine, and it's actually a neurotoxin that affects the brain, the nervous system. It's not just something that, you know, can give you lung cancer, as we all know. Well, all the nightshades are cousins. So the potato and tomato, the eggplant, chili peppers,
green peppers, red peppers,
yeah,
yellow
green
peppers,
all the peppers, yeah. Not black pepper, but all these other, like, plants that are peppers. These, they all contain some form of nicotine.
Nicotine,
yeah, so,
really? Oh, my.
Yeah, so you want to just avoid them as much as possible. And I find when I do personal counseling with people, I find that this is a point that they have the most trouble giving up, is the tomatoes and potatoes. And I'm sure that it has something to do that it's related to tobacco, because someone who smokes doesn't just stop smoking. Now they're so drawn back to it, and there's somehow this just draws them back to it, because they have more trouble stopping potatoes and tomatoes than they do sugar, I find.
Yes. You know, I had a patient years ago with very, very chronic arthritis. It was really, really bad. And I told her, and I have to say this, but, you know, she was Italian, and she loved her pastas. You know, she loved having the pasta with the tomato sauce. And I told her, I said, I think you would have better results in getting rid of the pain that you're experiencing in your joints, in your hands, in your feet, if you stop eating tomatoes. And it was like, no way. I love tomatoes, and I'm not giving them up. And so you're saying that it's a possibility that the nicotine in that was more addictive to her than just the flavor of the tomato itself.
Well, that's right. Yeah, it definitely has a very addictive effect. And, I mean, we think about it, we always connect the tomatoes with Italian food culture, but the tomato comes from Mexico originally, and the word tomato is from the Aztec language. And the Spanish invaders, they took it back to Europe with them. And first it was just a ornamental plant. It was not considered to be something you eat. And so, you know, the whole thing of this being traditional Italian food just isn't right. It was introduced. But what has really been interesting to me, I worked for several years, as I mentioned, in a German medical clinic. And our best successes with patients who stayed, we had a six-week program that was paid for by the health insurance. In those 6 weeks, we had our best results with rheumatoid arthritis, because there were no nightshades in the food, and in 6 weeks, almost everybody was either cured or doing so well they knew they were on the right track. It had become much less a problem. You know, I've seen it happen many, many times, and I tell people about this when they come to me with chronic rheumatoid arthritis, you know, and they're taking harm them in the long term, and they think there's no way out of it. And what it does take is something that this person you just mentioned doesn't have, and that is a flexible sense of curiosity. What would it be like to not have them for a while just to see how it feels? Mm-hmm. And then you can judge later, because you can always go back to having them later on.
Right.
Something else to eat. But you brought up an important point here, which is having a mental attitude that is flexible, playful, curious about life, and let's find out what it would be like to do things differently.
Well, that's important, and I think even in finding out what you may be allergic to can be done in a joyful way versus it being mundane. What would you suggest to someone that comes to you that has allergies? How would you go about assisting them in finding out what they may be allergic to, minimizing or eliminating it from their diet? Would you start with eliminating everything and just putting one thing in at a time, or taking one thing out at a time?
Well, it's an interesting situation. A lot of people have this. So there's two things going on here. First of all is, why is the person allergic? This is what we would find out. And then secondly, how can we reduce the symptoms? So obviously, and then gluten, those are the two most common reactions.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, you don't take those. You don't want to suffer. But the real question is, why do you have this allergy? And it always comes back to your gut bacteria, like having enough balance in the gut bacteria. And it's just a matter of changing that, creating a healthy gut bacteria, because the bacteria themselves either trigger a a reaction, or they will help the body deal with the reaction. So, for example, without getting too technical about this, but there are little gaps between the cells in our intestinal lining, and these will open up to allow nutrients in, or they close. Take certain foods, then that'll create such an opening that then things will get through that are not supposed to get in there, and that will then create an allergic reaction in the blood because these molecules are there that should not be there. So you want to be thinking about eating food that are going to improve the gut lining through a better gut bacteria, and then you'll find that you begin tolerating foods that you should tolerate. Like there should not be a reaction to something like, you know, some vegetables people would have. But so you're doing both these things at once. Because if you just do the elimination program, then that's okay. It's like you have to walk a tightrope there and never take anything that, you know, like don't eat any peanuts because, you know, the cause of a reaction. And then you should be able to come to a point where the peanuts no longer will trigger a reaction because now your gut bacteria have reformed and these bacteria are much more important than people realize. That the things like butyric acid and acetic acid that are created out of the bacteria, they actually soothe and create a very harmonious gut condition so that you don't get the leakage of these wrong molecules into the blood, so there's no reaction. So it's a big subject. Of course, I'm trying to just like keep it brief, but that's kind of the essence of it.
I understand. It is it's a pretty deep subject. And I thank you for giving us that little snippet of the synopsis. So the most important thing to remember, listeners and viewers, is to make sure that you have the proper gut flora, is what you're saying. So even if you have allergies, if we begin first by trying to improve the gut flora, we may be able to eliminate or minimize something that we may have a tendency to react to just by improving the gut defense, in other words, with the prebiotics and the probiotics, is what you're saying, right, Stephen?
That's right. That's exactly right. One of my favorite doctors is Dr. Milton Mills, and he's a black physician, and he is a master of these kind of things, and he's mentioned that with his allergic patients, if they're black, that 75% of them get better just by cutting out dairy food because there's like an inborn reaction to dairy food that black people have actually got a natural condition. That is, they don't do well with lactose or milk sugar.
Yeah.
And that's actually the European people have actually had a mutation because they've been overwhelmed with all this lactose in dairy food, like cheese and yogurt, all this stuff, that there's been actually a mutation, so the body will accept that, but it's not natural. So then you have like USDA recommendations, as Dr. Mills points out, saying all children should have milk, and 90% of the Asians, 75% of the blacks, should not even go close to milk because their digestive systems are not made for that. I mean, they're breaking down lactose with lactase is supposed to stop when they stop breastfeeding. And that's a quick way to take care of allergies. And you find, like with the tomatoes, people say, I don't want to stop the cheese, you know, I keep it coming.
Yes. Well, Stephen, you know, we've come to the end of our hour. Can you believe that hour went by so fast? I really appreciate you being on the program today. And if you had any final remarks that you would like to make, please make them at this point.
Yeah, I would say that the most important thing for people to remember is that if you take care of your health, there's nothing to be afraid of. There's so much fear going around. I have been like walking in the forest here. I live on the outskirts of Stockholm. I'm very close to a big forest, and walking there, and during the height of the COVID hysteria, I had woman snapped at me because as we met each other, just, you know, walking out on the line, I was going one way, she's going the other. She thought that I didn't keep enough space from her, you know, we're out in the forest, you know. And she was so afraid of getting the virus from me that she just snapped at me that I should keep my distance. And, you know, this is a horrible way to have to live, being afraid. And I am just never afraid. So what's better than having a fearless life? You know, so there's all the things of soaking the grains and all these, it's really nothing compared to just being able to lift that veil of fear.
Well, I enjoy you today, and I can see in your face that you actually walk your walk and talk your talk, and you live it every day, and you're a living example to all of us of how we can incorporate good foods, good thoughts, good nutrition, and have a good, healthy life. Thank you so much for being with us this day, and I hope to see you again soon. Always victory, my dear brother. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay. That's the end of our interview with Stephen Akoff. I hope you all have enjoyed it. But we still have a few more minutes left on our program here. So what I'd like to do is wrap up for the month of February. I know we're into March, but I thank you very much for your patience. I hope that you've enjoyed some of the interviews that you've had an opportunity to listen to over the past month. I mean, it's so important to look at nutrition. I thought the month of February would be a good month for us to start looking at what we're doing and how we can make those changes if we're not eating properly. I know for some of us in the Northern Hemisphere, we're moving away from winter, which winters can be harder on people as far as getting around and what types of foods. Do we eat heavier foods because this is the time of the year where the body needs to be able to stay warmer, so we eat foods that we're inclined to do that versus more of the cooling foods. So as we move more into the springtime, we'll begin to eat more and more of the foods that energetically help us to maintain that energy, but they will be lighter, such as your vegetables and such as your fruits. But some of us are moving into our fall and into the winter months now, if you're in the Southern Hemisphere. And so this would be just the opposite for you. But what you can do is continue to use what you've learned, no matter what the season is, and incorporate into your diet, into your nutritional lifestyle, what is important for you. We've talked about the yin foods, and we've talked about the yang foods. We've talked about the energetics of foods to a point of you now looking at the foods, and this is where your diary would come in handy, or your journal, if you want to call it that. You jot down how you feel every day after you eat. Do you feel energized? Does the food make you happy when you eat it? Does the foods make you happy to prepare them? All of this is part of the whole healing process, because if, as we talked about, he mentioned the routine of soaking the foods and the importance of soaking the foods and why. But if you find that to be laborious, why is it laborious? What can we do to change our mental attitude about soaking our foods and about going to the store and looking at the foods? And as I mentioned to you before, see what you gravitate to. Is the foods that you gravitate to more in tune with a healthy lifestyle, or do you tend to shop for convenience, which would be, again, as I mentioned in the program, buying in bulk, but it's the wrong kind of bulk that we buy. Do we still buy a lot of snacks because snacks help us through our emotional binges that we go through too, and we're not even aware that it's an emotional binge. Begin to look at these things and see what is most important for you at this particular time. Do you emotionally eat? Are you eating to stay in life? Are you eating to heal? Are you eating to release weight? Are you eating to gain muscle tone? What are your reasons for putting the food in your mouth? And let it have a significant purpose. And even if it is that it's a treat that you're having and you're going to have something that is pleasurable to your taste buds because you want to reward yourself or you have you want to satisfy a need, make sure, if it's all possible, it's something that will be nutritional and necessary and beneficial and worthwhile for your body and your body type. What is your body type? That's another question that to ask yourself. There are different books out there that you can read. Some of you may have read the books years ago, the book that was out in regards to your blood type is your body type. You know, are you blood type O or AB or A or B? And there was a doctor, an MD, that actually took this information, and with his study with certain patients, he was able to find that a certain blood type enjoyed or benefited better from certain types of food. You may want to look at that too. If you are, for an example, an O type body blood type, O type blood type individuals tend to need more protein in their body, according to him and according to my patients that I actually did the study on to see if it worked for them or not. And the O type individuals tend to crave, some of them, if that's their mindset, they would crave more of the meat and the heavy meat. And then you have those that are vegetarian but have the need to have that satisfaction with making sure that they get enough protein. There are blood type A type people are just the opposite. They would be more inclined to be more vegan possibly, or lighter foods. So you can look at foods from different perspectives to see what's best for you. But as the masters taught through the teachings of the Ascended Masters, when you look at your body type, we talked about the yin constitution and the yang constitution, and you can incorporate finding a balance. It's all about balance, everyone. Finding the balance that would work for your body. Finding the balance that would work for your constitution. If you're more yin, eating a lot of yin foods would take you to even more yin. If you are more yang and eating a whole lot of yang food would make you even more yang. How can you get that balance? How can you get back into the middle? We talk quite a bit about yin and yang constitutions and what to look for. So if you haven't looked at that PowerPoint, I know you have received the link, and if you haven't received the link, you can contact us at DaoHealingConnection@gmail.com, DaoHealingConnection@gmail.com, to receive the link for the PowerPoint that would help you to determine if you are yin or yang in your body constitution. What would you look for in that study of who you are and how it relates to your body constitution, and what you expect the foods to do if you need it to make that change. So this comes about you doing the study that you need to do. You can analyze your foods as well as analyze the effects that the foods have on you. When I say analyze the foods, that means you can find materials, which we've shared with you, that your some of your yin material yin foods would be like your apples would be very yin, pears would be yin, oranges would be considered yin in some instances. However, oranges would also be very helpful for someone that had a yin condition, like a cold or a lot of mucus, to a point, to a point. Lemons are the same way, to a point. And I say to a point because in Chinese medicine, we also know that too much of the yin, too much of the oranges, or too much of the limes and lemons will also produce mucus, which is, again, a yin situation. So we talked about the body constitution, and the proportions of the body can also help you to determine if you are more of a yin body type or a yang body type. For an example, if you had a smaller head versus a longer body, and that long body was in ratio 1 to 8, the proportions, the head out of that 8 part, then that would be a smaller head, and that individual would possibly be more of a yin body type. Yin body types, if you remember, we talked about, are usually your slender people, elongated individuals, looking more like your models or your basketball players. Those individuals usually have more of the yin body, and the yang body types would be just the opposite. They would be more of your stocky individuals, those individuals that are shorter in stature, that are broader in the chest, broader in the across the arms, shoulders, I mean, and their faces are not elongated. They're more square than they are elongated. We also talked about the ears and how an individual with smaller ears to have had more of a yin constitution, and those with the larger ears have more of a yang constitution. And if the ears were thin and small and higher set on the head, that was also an indication of a and you had small earlobes, that could be an indication of a weakness in the kidneys. And this all came about, our body constitutions was something that we inherited from our parents. So remember, if you are of that childbearing age and you're looking to start a family, to make sure that you have the proper nutrition going in your body so that you can give this nutrition to your children. Now, some people would say, well, that happens more with the woman. Yes, it does. However, the man is also responsible for his share of the Jing, J-I-N-G, which is the ancestral chi or the ancestral energy individual would get. So it's the mother's energy as well as the father's energy that goes into the child. So we want to make sure that we give our children, if we all possibly can, the best nutrition, the best vitamins, the best of everything possible, even before procreation. So that means you, as an individual, do what you can to be nutritionally sound and have the nutritional wellness that's required before procreation, male and female. However, if we tend to have come and we have these short, I'm not even going to say what I was going to say, but we can improve even if we have small ears. We can improve not the Jing, because whatever Jing essence that we got at birth, that's what we got. However, we own daily lives with what we do with what we have. We can make the best of it, or we can make the worst of it. I am inclined to assist you in having the mindset that you want to make the best of it. So making the best would be eating properly, looking at what you're eating and the intent of the food. Again, it's the intent of the food to help me to heal. It's the intent of the food to help me to release weight so that I can work on healing. Maybe there is an aspect that the doctors have said that obesity causes diabetes and you're pre-diabetic or something to that nature, and you want to prevent getting a condition called diabetes, then you're looking at doing two things, releasing the weight and also improving your health status so that you can have the wellness that you desire to have. So that is what you do during your reflection. What is this program going to help me to do? We finished up the second month. Now we're into the third month. And we'll be moving into what we can start doing. It's time for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere to move a little bit more. And so we're going to talk about moving. But as we close out this month, meaning the month of February, with the nutrition that we've talked about, it's taking whatever we can do, whatever we eat, let it be substance that's going to sustain our life, improve our life, or maintain our life if we're living a good and healthy nutritional, and we have a good and healthy nutritional lifestyle. Either way it goes, it is important for us to take the steps. We can no longer live on this planet without doing what we can do to make the improvements. As we all know, we're all bombarded or energetically, even if we're not faced with any crisis, we feel energy and the imbalances of that energy on the planet. What can you do to sustain yourself, sustain your life force? We have to be just like the trees, just like the blade of grass, just like everything else that is in nature. We have to be in tune to the cycles of the energy. And I'm speaking of the cycles of energy of life so that we are working with it rather than it working against us. We're working with it. So if we're in the winter month, we know this is a dormant time. Does not mean we have to be dormant. What it means is we do things to maintain the life force, the energy, and we have to put a little bit more effort into it. Also, more effort into moving around and not being stationary. Otherwise, we could be just like the bear and go into hibernation and not come out. But however, energetically, we have to find foods that will help us and find vegetables and do breathing techniques, as we've talked about throughout this program so far, that will help us to bring in that life force, bring in that energy that will help us to fire up that chi, fire up that dantian energy that is in the area of the solar plexus and the seat of the soul chakra in that area. Fire it up so that we can have that furnace firing and bringing life force into every part of our body. And if you're in the summer time or the spring cycle, wherever you may be living, then it may be just the opposite. You want things that would be cooling. You want to find a way of maintaining your energy without it being depleted because of the heat, but at the same time receiving the outdoors sunlight and the energy from being outdoors and allowing it to help to re-energize and revitalize your body as well. And as you heard Stephen mention, how important it is to get the vitamin D. And as we know, the best source of vitamin D would be to be able to get as much sunlight as possible, depending upon your body. Again, if you are very fair skinned, then you have to be concerned about sunscreens or whatever. That would be very protective. And if you have more melanin in your skin, it doesn't mean that you don't want to protect your skin as well. However, you have to find a way that you can work with nature that's going to be helpful and balancing and re-energizing and revitalizing to your mind and to your body. So one thing that we didn't do today with Stephen on the call earlier was to do our breathing technique. So let's take a few minutes in the last few minutes that we have left and do a breathing technique. As you remember, we would do our Dwal Kul breathing, and we also learned how important it was to recognize that as we take in that breath and it's fired into our cells, that we're also igniting the nitric oxide that is very helpful in opening up the blood vessels so that more energy can flow, meaning the blood is flowing and there's no constrictions there, and those cells are getting the oxygen that it needs. And as the cells go into every part of the body, because there's less constrictions, because we're able to fire that nitric oxide, we're able to get more energy moving within the cells, which is also very healing. So we're going to keep that in mind as we do our breathing technique right now before we close out for today. So let's make sure that you put your pencils and your papers down. You've taken enough notes today. I want you now to put your feet flat on the floor. And if you're lying down, if you can sit up and do this exercise, that's great. But if you still need to lie down, fine. Please lie flat on your back if you can, with your arms at your side and your palms up. And if you're sitting with your feet flat on the floor, if you're sitting in the lotus position, then please make sure that your backs are straight and erect so that your lung capacity would be at its fullest. Because when we slump over, as you can imagine, our lungs are collapsing too because there's less space there. And if, as we sit up or stand straight, then our lungs are able to expand more as we breathe in. So we want to make sure that we can do that as well. So I want you to take a deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth. And as we start the conscious breathing, in through your nose and out through your mouth, feel yourself going more and more into your heart chakra or your secret chamber of your heart, if you like. Feeling yourself becoming more and more relaxed and attuned to the sound of my voice and your breathing, everything else around you is quieted now. No matter if, even if there's still noise, the noise becomes part of the breathing. In through your nose and out through your mouth. And as you breathe in through your nose, make sure that you are feeling the oxygen as you can. Imagine going down into your lungs. And as you exhale out, all of that oxygen now is going into every cell of your body from your lungs. In, igniting the nitric oxide, and out. And if you recall, as you continue breathing, I had you place your hand under your navel, right below your belly button, so that you can feel the expansion. As you breathe in, expand your lower abdomen, and as you exhale, press your stomach all the way back as if you're pressing your belly button back to your spine. Inhale again. And as you do that, just know that you're filling up your lungs to the fullest capacity, all the way up to under your collarbones, the top of your shoulders. Believe it or not, your lungs can fill up all the way up there. Exhale. Inhale. And exhale. Letting go of any tension or stress in your shoulders, in your neck, your upper and lower back, middle back, your legs, your feet, your thighs, your arms, your hands, as we do this. Everything should begin to feel light and weightless as you're sitting in the chair, on the couch, side of the bed, or you're lying down or sitting on the floor. As you become one with your breath, in and out. And now we're going to incorporate the Dwell Crew breathing. We're going to say in our minds, you'll say it with me if you like in your mind, I am Alpha and Omega. We'll say that as we inhale. You'll hold it, and I'll say, I am Alpha and Omega. Then you will exhale on the same 8 counts, I am Alpha and Omega. Then you will hold it, not taking a breath in yet. I am Alpha and Omega. And then you'll breathe in. A full deep breath, recognizing that you're firing all of your cells with this light. Every cell is now receiving the nitric oxide that it needs so that it can flow and it can move freely and openly back and forth through every organ of your body. And if there's an area of your body that needs more attention, be it your heart, your pancreas, your liver, your gallbladder, your kidneys, or your lungs, wherever, I invite you to get you a picture of the anatomy so that you can have a visual of this if you don't have it in your mind. But for now, we're going to say this. Dwell breathing. Repeat in your mind after me. Inhale. I am Alpha and Omega. Hold it. I am Alpha and Omega. Exhale. I am Alpha and Omega. Hold it. I am Alpha and Omega. Inhale. I am Alpha and Omega. Hold it. I am Alpha and Omega. Exhale. I am Alpha and Omega. Hold it. I am Alpha and Omega. As we close today, you continue to do that if you like. God bless you. I'm so grateful that you've been able to listen to this program today. May the light of God be with you. And I look forward to you being with me again very soon. I am Alpha and Omega. Always victory. I am Alpha and Omega. I am Alpha and Omega. I am Alpha and Omega. Bye for now. I am Alpha and Omega. I am Alpha and Omega.